Half a day, and welcome to Harvest Echoes from Harvest Baptist Church on Guam. Since our founding in 1975, pastors, evangelists, and missionaries have traveled from all over the world to Guam to speak to our people, preaching and teaching the Word of God. We're providing you access to this rich archive of sermons and lessons on Harvest Echoes. Our mission is to help people develop a heart for God. These messages, presented in conferences and special services at Harvest, seek to point you toward the Lord Jesus Christ and His Word. Today, a message from Dr. Les Olala. It was presented in October of 2007. The title of the message, Business Lessons from the Unjust Steward.
Luke chapter 16. There is one of these puzzling parables. Verse 1, and he said unto his disciples, there was a certain rich man which had a steward, and the same was accused unto him that he had wasted his goods. And he called him and said unto him, how is it that I hear this of thee? Give an account of thy stewardship, for thou mayest no longer be a steward. Then the steward said within himself, what shall I do? For my Lord taketh away from me the stewardship. I cannot dig to beg. I am ashamed. So this guy thinking, he goes to work, and the boss says, come in here, I want to talk to you. He said, empty your desk, take your stapler, take your stuff, you're done. He said, no, what do I do now? Then he said, I can't dig. Probably the only calluses he had probably on his elbows from tipping a few. He said, to beg, I'm ashamed. I'm too proud to go out begging. I am resolved what to do, that when I am put out of the stewardship, they may receive me into their houses. So he called every one of his Lord's debtors unto him, and he said unto the first, how much owest thou thy Lord? And he said, 100 measures of oil. And he said unto him, take thy bill and sit down quickly and write 50. Then said he to another, how much owest thou? And he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said unto him, take thy bill and write 80. So here's what this guy said, I'm going to get fired. So what I've got to do very quickly is I've got to get to the debtors, and I'm going to go to them and take the bill that I sent them, take one this cut in half and take this percentage off this one. Why? Because he's thinking, you know what? They will receive me into their house. They will say, you know, this guy was so good to us. When I get fired, I'm going to have somewhere to go. I've often thought of that. I told my wife, our retirement plan, let's make friends the first half of our life and then go visit them the second half of our life. It's kind of like what this guy was thinking here, I think. He said, I'm resolved, when I am put out of the stewardship, they may receive thee into their houses. Now, verse 8 is the shocker. Then the Lord commended the unjust steward because he had done wisely. So I'm scratching my head, he commended, and I'm sure that's what the Pharisees were doing at this point too, because they said, oh boy, now he's commending a crook. And he commended the unjust steward because he had done wisely, for the children of this world are in their generation wiser than the children of light. Now, what do we learn from this? People of the light stand on the edge of eternity, but lack the vision and the foresight to live and invest their lives in that which is eternal. How many times those who have the truth and how many times those have values that are genuine values take those values and cast them aside as though they did not even matter to them. And we have to come to a point in our life, you're going to come to a time in life when everything precious to you will fit in the drawer of your hospital room and in the closet. How many have you visited in the last days of their life and their life's possessions are in the drawer and the closet? A robe and slippers and a watch and a wedding ring. And that's it. Because that is where things are going. Three things very quickly. Number one, I want to challenge us tonight, be spiritual in your finances. I want to take this from verse 9 and then examine why was this unjust steward commended by the Lord? Because he's teaching a much bigger picture to the disciples to whom he is giving this parable. Because he says in verse 9, "And I say unto you, make to yourselves friends of the mammon of unrighteousness, that when ye fail, they may receive you into everlasting habitations." First thing this is teaching, be spiritual with your finances. In other words, take that which you have, what is called unrighteous mammon, the money with which you live. You make money to live and you make money to make purchases. And he is saying, make to yourself friends, that when you fail, they may receive you into their house. First of all, we see friendship with widows is commanded. Widows and the fatherless and the poor. Job 24 and verse 4, they turn the needy out of the way. The poor of the earth hide themselves. We have a responsibility biblically to take care of those who are the widows and those who are the fatherless and those who are poor of this world. There is a responsibility. James 1:27, pure religion and undefiled is to visit the fatherless and the widows in their affliction and to keep himself unspotted from the world. So we have that basic responsibility as God has given to us. Secondly, in what the parable is teaching here, for the furtherance of the gospel and fruit that is eternal. I don't want us to miss this, because being spiritual in our finances involves having a gaze on what God has for us in eternity, not for what we have now. And he said unto them, "I say unto you, make to yourselves friends of mammon of unrighteousness, that when ye fail," in other words, when you die, "you may be received into everlasting habitations." If you look up in verse 4, the unjust steward thought to himself, "I'm going to give these guys money off their bill so that they may receive me into their houses." This guy had enough foresight to look ahead to see, make preparation. He was not being praised for being crooked. He was being praised for having foresight to plan about that which was yet coming. Now, how does that apply to us? Who do you think is referred to here that when ye fail, in other words, when you die, they may receive you into everlasting habitations? I think "they" being plural, not only does it refer to God, but it also refers to every single person who was saved through your investment and your time and your dedication. Receive you into everlasting habitations. Why, if this unjust crook had enough foresight to look ahead to plan who would receive him, how can you miss the fact that your life and your things are to be given in such a way that when you die, you will have a welcoming committee? But God, the eternal record keeper, is the only one who knows how to accurately keep record. When you drop a dime towards a mission project, that is very accurately recorded, and you have a part, though you're not on that mission field, and though you're not over at that radio station, or though you're not over in Siberia, but you gave to that project, and God, the record keeper, the accountant supreme, is keeping a record. And when you die and you're welcomed home, there's going to be a welcoming committee of those who were saved because you, in a biblical, spiritual way, used what God gave you for the cause of the gospel. How lightly do we take the responsibility of giving? And I'm not preaching on money tonight. I'm preaching on values. Because I'm not the pastor of the church. I'm not going to milk money. If you're visiting here, there's no obligation to you. But the joy, if you learn the joy, say, you know, God has given me this. And just think, I'm going to invest in that. That person gets saved eventually as a result of that. You say, well, how do you know God's keeping a record? Philippians chapter 4, 17, 18, and 19. Paul was writing to the Philippian church, the ones who gave so liberally to him. And he said, not that I desire a gift. He said, I don't want the gift that you're giving to me. But I desire, note what he says, what is it? Fruit that may abound to your account. In other words, what was Paul saying? Those people in Philippi who were no part of his preaching, in Philippi who were not in the meetings he had done in Athens and in Corinth and in Ephesus. But Paul says, you have fruit that is multiplying in your account. I'll tell you what, if you have a habit of opening the newspaper, this is not one of the pressures I have faced in life. Check the stock market. You open and say, oh man, well, what's Procter & Gamble doing today? Oh man, I'll tell you what, you'd never have a down with this investment. But 100-fold? I mean, we don't even know how God, but we do know this. This is an actual accounting term when Paul says that fruit may be abounding to your account. So you say, okay, I give. Together we build. What's the big deal here? We're getting another building started. Why? In order that there can be a broader advance of the gospel for the sending of more people for the gospel to go and preach the world's, the needs of the world. And those who are a part of that building process, it's not just the pastor, it's not just the staff, it's every single individual who will be spiritual in his finances. One thing I don't know I could ever understand is a believer who doesn't have enough faith to believe that God owns the first percent. Someone told me, I don't believe in tithing. I said, I don't either. I think tithing is a good beginning. It's a horrible place to stop. If you say, I grace give, well, great, grace has always exceeded the law. So I said, I'm glad you're grace giver, not tither. Because, boy, that grace giving is, you can really be rolling. But yet there are some people who don't even tithe. Why? They don't believe God's promises. Nor do they believe that God owns it all. Why did they have tithing in the Old Testament? One reason, to teach them to fear God. Because if I write my check of tithe, I am also acknowledging, God, you own all of it. I'm just permitted to use this percentage of it. And again, I'm not going to put you on a guilt trip for your giving tonight. I'm just trying to get you excited about investing. Because giving is like, oh man, I got to do that now. They're talking about this gym over here, and what does that mean now? And you come into church holding your wallet, and you think, oh boy, now what? Instead of the joy of saying, yeah, I'm going to make this investment because God is a whole lot better than Wall Street. And that's an eternal. But you say, I can't afford to tithe. Well, no, when you see what is eternal, it won't even be a matter of discussion for you. When I speak to businessmen, and I talk about their last will and testament, I said, the last will, it's talking about the distribution of my goods, and the testament is a statement of my relationships. That said, if I'm in a courtroom and I'm hearing a will being read, and this guy who died had 5 children, and 4 are named in a will and 1 is not, that tells me something about that father's relationship to that child. And I say, if your will is being read in a courtroom, and everyone is named in it but God, that makes a major statement about that relationship. And stop to think what God has given to us in order that we might invest in that which is eternal. And who will be the welcoming committee? I'm glad God in his perfect wisdom has it all recorded and follows every amount, every investment, every block that goes into this new gym, everything that goes into building this ministry, and the people who go out back to the islands preaching the gospel. God in his omniscience keeps it all straight. and you're welcomed by those who have come to know Christ as a result of your investment in that eternal business. What an exciting thought. A couple of weeks back, a guy called me and he said, could you come over to my camp? And he said, I'd like us just to spend a night there, just the two of us. This guy was on the Federal Reserve Board for 11 years. Alan Greenspan. I had talked to him before. He had made a profession of faith. But he said, I'm not sure how I stand with this. And he said, I just like the two of us. So he fixed a nice steak supper at his camp. Look, I mean, probably about a $2 million shack on 17,000 acres. So he had a little bit of area to kind of run around there. Most people have a dirt trail going to their deer stand. He had a train, literally a train. And Charlene and I took a ride on it. It was one of these little park trains, you know, choop, choop, whoop, whoop. And he built an arch and he built everything for this. And boy, he had groups, school groups coming in there now. We sat down after we ate and we talked for 3 solid hours from the scriptures about eternal destiny. He said, I want to make sure about this. I explained again to him, Christ paid the penalty for our sin. We are separated from God. He paid the penalty for our sin. And we went 3 hours. I went all the way into the great white throne judgment. Then he began expressing burden for his friends. He said, these guys have it all, but they don't get it. He said, they don't get it. They don't understand their need. And yet here's a man who himself is just getting his eternal destiny settled, and yet he's burdened for those who are without the gospel. What an investment. Secondly, and we move to a close quickly here, not only be spiritual in your finances, be steadfast in your faithfulness. Together we build. How? Well, in faithfulness. And you see Luke chapter 16, verses 10, 11, and 12. First of all, we see faithfulness in verse 10, in that which is least. If you're faithful in that which is least, you'll be faithful also in much. And he that is unjust in least is also unjust in much. How do we handle little things? I so much appreciate the faithfulness of this number of people coming out to these meetings. You know what? It's a little thing, but it's a big thing. A lot of people can be entrusted with huge things, but they don't want to be any part of little things. What are the behind-the-scenes things? If you're faithful in that which is little, you'll also be made faithful in that which is much. We had a policy in our choir when we were in Roseville, Michigan, that you could only sing solos if you were in the choir. That is, you couldn't just say, I'm not going to be in the choir because they sing off key. I have such a perfect year that it really makes me nervous standing next to some of these people who sing by letter and they open up and let her fly. Your gift is so great that it can only be demonstrated in a solo thing. Well, you can go and sing in the parking lot. You're not going to sing in church because you can't do little things. You're not going to do big things well. Faithful in that which is little. I remember when Herons were on our ministry. In fact, I was telling our staff this a while back in our in-service. And I said, you know, if you go to Guam right now, you see a ministry called Harvest Ministries. You see a tremendous staff there. God put Marty and Tammy Heron and family there. I said, but how did God give them the privilege of being a part of that ministry there in Guam? I know why, because I saw how they lived. every hurting person. They were invested. They were picking up this person, trying to adopt that hurting child there in town, in the lives of doctors, in the lives of people who were down and outers, all the time behind the scenes, little things, little thing, little thing. And when this pulpit opened here and God saw someone who he could trust with this ministry, now you have a Together We Build. But you don't drop out of the sky. You don't graduate from college and just drop into a ministry like this because you know nothing of brokenness. You know nothing of hurting. You know nothing of these things. How do we handle little things? Secondly, be steadfast in your money. In ye therefore have been faithful in unrighteous mammon. Who will commit to you true riches? In other words, if you can't handle the practical things well, who is going to give you true wisdom? And true riches is not referring to dollars here. It is speaking to wisdom. How will I have wisdom to live my daily life? And then thirdly, faithful in another's possessions. And by the way, the main other possession we have is the gospel that has been entrusted to us. The gospel of God's grace, because we have been given a stewardship of the gates back in Nehemiah. We're given the stewardship of gifts in this chapter, and we're given the stewardship of grace later with the spread of the gospel. And the greatest thing entrusted to us is the gospel. And if you have not been faithful in that which is another man's, who shall give you that which is your own? And then we close with number three, be single in your focus. I think what a step this could be. This is what we're learning from this lesson of this unjust steward. Christ tells a parable about someone who really was a steward who was crooked. And he compliments the fact this guy was shrewd enough to have a plan for the future. And Christians don't even think beyond the ends of their nose to think there's an eternity waiting for them. And they're missing the whole thought of what it could be. Look in verse 13. No man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. Ye cannot serve God and mammon. So we see being single in our focus. I want us to look in the book of Colossians chapter 4. I want to talk about a fellow named Demas for a second here because I believe it would be a good lesson for us. I stumbled on this studying a message on prayer from Epaphras in verse 12 of Colossians chapter 4. It said, Epaphras, who was one of you, a servant of Christ, saluteth you always, laboring fervently for you in prayers, that ye may stand perfect and complete in all the will of God. For I bear him record that he hath great zeal for you and them that are in Laodicea and Hierapolis. Luke, the beloved physician, and Demas greet you. So I went back to the broader context, verse 7. Paul gives accolades to Tychicus, a beloved brother, faithful minister, fellow servant. Verse 9, Onesimus, a faithful and beloved brother, one of you. Aristarchus, a fellow prisoner. Marcus, sister's son to Barnabas, touching whom you receive commandments. Justice, who is Jesus, fellow workers unto the kingdom of God. And then he goes down here to Epaphras, the lesson I was studying on prayer, and verse 14, Luke, the beloved physician, the doctor that traveled with Paul. And then he says, and Demas. I thought that was pretty significant. No comment. If you were to go to Dr. Heron and say, you know Les? Yeah, what do you think of him? And he were to say, no comment. A, would you think he had so many good things to say that it would take the rest of the night and nobody has that much time? Or B, he has enough character. If he can't say anything good, he's not going to say anything. I think he would accept the latter. And to me, it jumped at me that here Paul gives all the accolades and names, and he says, and Demas. No comment. Paul's last letter, what did he say? Demas hath forsaken me, having loved this present world. What a statement. didn't say Demas left our ministry because he ran off with the organist. It didn't say Demas left our ministry, he got caught in internet porn. Demas hath forsaken me, having loved this present world. And where was he? Lycus Valley. Everything that was available was there. Everything that would satisfy man's longings and needs and lust was there. But I don't think Demas at all went into these things that would have been very ugly sins. I just think he just fell in love with the system. And probably to the average Laodicean, he probably was very, very acceptable. He may have even joined the Laodicean church, who knows? Because it would have fitted his mentality. It would have fit his attitude. And we see Luke 16:13, no servant can serve two masters, for he will hate the one or despise the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. In Matthew 6:19-24, the same concept, lay not up for yourself treasures on earth. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Ye cannot serve God and mammon. Are we single focused? Are we single in our gaze? What are we emphasizing? Two things we need to concentrate on. We need to dethrone materialism. And after you dethrone materialism, dedicate your whole heart to God. And don't live with a divided heart. Be spiritual in your finances. Be faithful in your practices. And be single in your focus. Be single, focused. Don't be double-minded. Don't let your light and heart be turned aside to different things.
You've been listening to Harvest Echoes and a message titled Business Lessons from the Unjust Steward by Dr. Les Olala. It was originally presented in October of 2007 at Harvest Baptist Church on Guam. Harvest Echoes provides you access to a rich archive of sermons and lessons presented at conferences and special meetings at Harvest Baptist Church. Send us a comment or question by visiting our website, hbcguam.net. hbcguam.net. And thank you for listening to Harvest Echoes.